You have questions. Find your answers at starspsychics.com.
Hello, I'm Natalie, owner of starspsychics.com. I am dedicated to providing affordable access to spiritual advisors. Here are two satisfied clients who will tell you what it's like to work with me.
Quoting Jackie.
It's a comfortable site. Everybody is so friendly. They treat you like family.
Barb added this about Natalie.
She's a kind and caring person who gives accurate readings.
You have questions? Find your answers today at starspsychics.com. That's stars with a Z, psychics.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Natalie, also known as Starscast, and I want to welcome everybody tonight. I don't know what the weather's like really where you are, but, you know, I'm in South Carolina, and it's like 50 degrees, and I've got this, I look like Nanook. I've got this big, heavy robe on. You'd think I was back up in Michigan with the ice and the snow. But anyways, we're going to have a great show tonight. I can tell you that right now. I wanted to talk a little bit about what's coming up. We have the Mystic, you know, we have my Mystic Living Today. And articles, poems, press releases are due like the end of the month. I give everybody at this time of the year more extra days. Because it's the holiday time, and people say, oh, my God, I forgot to send it to her. Don't worry about it. I put it up. I'll do it on the first if I have to. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter to me. It's all good. And so we have that coming. You can just submit stuff to Starscast at mysticlivingtoday.com. My voice is raspy already. That's not good. Anyways, I want to tell you about stars with a Z, psychics.com. You know, everybody knows that's my psychic site with all my advisors. I've interviewed them all. You know, they've been so devoted and so wonderful, and they're like a family. And I have one of them listening right now. I never mentioned her name, but she always listens to all my shows, and she will critique me at the end. You did a fantastic job, or she's never done it. To me at all, not at all. But anyways, let's bring on in our guest here. She's been through a lot. She's got a great story to tell you, but she came on the other side. And I'm just so impressed with all about her, what she's going to tell you. And her name is Lise Wilcox. Welcome tonight, Lise. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay, well, you know, Lise, we're going to start at the very beginning, I think. Kind of like before your life changed, and the two of us, we were kind of laughing because she, if you go to her Instagram, Lise Wilcox, is that, that's what it is, isn't it? I should look
yeah,
it up and make sure. And anyways, she has these lights on, these Christmas lights around her neck, and we were laughing because I have the very same lights hanging in my office. You know, I got mine, you know, they used to have the Osborne lights at Disney, and we were there for the last Christmas that they had them. Beautiful.
Aww.
It was freezing cold. And a lady who worked there, she had worked there for many years. We've known her a long time. She came up, and she said, put these around your neck. And I said, well, what are they? And she pressed this little button, and they all lit up. And you can make them blink. They can be solid. They can alternate. I mean, they're the coolest thing. And so I've got mine hanging in my office, and she has, if you go to her Instagram, you'll see them hanging around her neck. So we are matching tonight. Matching. Anyways, Lise, let's start at the beginning. You know, you are a survivor of breast cancer. We'll go into that. Gosh, all the stuff that you have done and what you're doing, you're just amazing. So let's start at the beginning when you were, 20-ish, whatever, and how you got to where you are. Just a little bit of a recap of your life is what I'm looking for.
Sure. I'm actually going to fast forward a little bit because it kind of starts in the middle that allowed me to go backwards and then brought me to current reality, if that's okay with you.
That's fine. That's fine.
Eight.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So I was about, I don't know, let's say early mid-30s. And I remember I was married. I lived in this gigantic century home, like a 7-bedroom home, with like a half acre of property. I could see the lake if I craned my neck just the right way from my front yard. And I remember we had done this beautiful renovation with three little girls. And I was lying on the floor with my little girls, looking at my like beautiful kitchen, this beautiful renovation, you know, my like $1,200 coffee maker where my husband was making me a cappuccino or something. And I remember thinking like, this really awful thought that, oh, I'm still not happy. And I was looking around me and I was like, oh my God, like, how is this not enough for me? And if this isn't enough for me, what the hell is wrong with me? And I remember hearing this little voice that I would call God. I know other people have different names for it, but I remember hearing this absolute voice saying, nothing will be enough for you until you are enough for you. And that was the real turning point of my life, because in that moment, I had this like gut-dropping awareness that I was going to have to make some pretty significant life changes, particularly with respect to my marriage. That was like this catalytic event for everything else that happened. So it was that moment of awareness that really drew my attention to, I had been putting on a lot of masks for a lot of years. And the way that I had, you know, created this emotional and neurological social safety was to go out of my way to make everybody else around me happy. And that was something that started way, 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 way back in childhood and probably even before then. I feel like this is a safe community to say that. And I had just learned, in order to receive this conditional love from the adults and parents of my life, that I was going to have to just keep putting on different masks and playing different roles to keep people happy. And by the time I was in my early mid-30s, as I say, all of a sudden it became profoundly obvious that I needed to do that, go through that like undoing and unmasking process.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the turning point of, well, it, you know, it led to a divorce pretty soon thereafter. And divorce was like this phoenix rising moment, because you know, I hate being divorced. I didn't want to be divorced. I really loved being married. And still, it wasn't the right partnership. And when it isn't the right partnership, it's not the right marriage. And that's not fair to anyone. So we have this notion of, you know, divorce being a failure. And we've got it culturally so backwards. Like staying in a marriage with a person that you don't love in the way they deserve to be loved, and being in a relationship in which you are not loved and accepted simply for being yourself, that's the failure. Like staying is the failure, not leaving it. So leaving it was incredibly difficult. I had no idea how difficult it was going to be. And it took me on this adventure from being a stay-at-home mom, or like a former educator turned stay-at-home mom, to basically inventing a career for myself overnight, going through a wild detour at breast cancer, writing a best-selling book during my chemotherapy treatment, and culminating to where I am now, which is like in this really beautiful place. I run a really successful coaching practice, and, you know, things have, I don't know, I don't even know how to finish that sentence.
Things of that nature.
It's been a trip.
Well, you know, I think, too, that we've all had experiences, some like yours, some like mine, and that's you're the only one that can talk about it. You've been there. You've done it. You came on the other side of it. And so you are great to talk to people and let them know that, you know, all is not lost. Granted, some people are not as fortunate. I know some.
Mm-hmm.
But let's look at it this way. I want to, and maybe I'm not being realistic, but I want to say everybody is going to come out of it okay. That's what I would wish for everybody, but we know that doesn't happen. But you are the greatest person to talk to take somebody through this journey, because you've been there.
Yeah.
You know? And I tip my hat to you, because
you're
amazing. I can hear it in your voice.
Thank you.
That was a long struggle. I mean, how long did it take to get from beginning to end and like, well, okay, now I can do this. Now I feel real good. Everything's going good.
Yeah.
I mean, did it take a long time?
I mean, it was 5 concentrated years of
really?
Like, very intentional, very focused attention and growth. Because that moment, like that catalyst, as I said, like divorce was like this, the beginning of the great unmasking, which sounds very dramatic, because it really was. Like, that was the moment I had to go back and really look at how this patterning came to be. And as a former Montessori educator, I had a little bit of a familiarity, like a pretty decent familiarity with how we develop our neural pathways and like what our early childhood psychological development looks and feels like. So I was able to do a little bit of self-study and was definitely consulting. I hired my own coach. I had my own therapist. And I started to really dig deep into the past. And my own past, which I had never, ever felt comfortable or strong enough to really, like, really genuinely confront and, like, facing that big shadow, was that really early on when I was, like, an infant, my mom left. And, you know, after a couple of years of just being my dad and I, or a few years of it just being my dad and I, you know, a stepmother came into the picture who was wildly abusive. And because it was emotional abuse, it's one of those things that kind of gets hidden under the radar. And
oh, yeah,
become,
I know.
Like masters.
Yep. And then all of a sudden after it's all passed, then it comes to the front and center and you feel all of its effects for a very long time. It doesn't go away.
And it's like it's insidious. And it's like, you know, you feel like you are the one who's going crazy. And because, you know, people who are great at emotionally abusing or who are great at narcissistic abuse, they're excellent at isolating you from and detaching you from, or disconnecting you from any kind of community so that they can put on this beautiful performance to anybody else. And ensure that you have no real connection to an outside world while behind closed doors making life like actual hell. And then you feel like you're doubting yourself. And we call it gaslighting now, but like you feel like you're going insane because everybody else is giving you these messages of like, oh, this is such a wonderful person. Look how, what a great family it is. And on the inside, it's like, oh my God, like nobody has any idea what my reality is.
No, you're
maybe
right. I know exactly what you're
saying.
In a sense, I know. Well, I do know. But I commend you because you walked away. You stood up. That's enough. This is enough. I'm not going to allow this to happen. And unfortunately for me, I wasn't as brave as you. And I don't want to say I'm not brave. I am very brave. But the thing of it is that I guess I had the fear. I had a fear.
Yeah.
I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
Although I was very capable, I had like two jobs.
Yeah.
I always had two jobs. But you know what I'm saying? You did an amazing thing. And look what you gave
Thank
up.
You.
Think back to what you gave up.
Oh, I know.
I mean,
I know.
Others could have said, oh, well, I'm not going to give this up. Look what I got. I'm living in this mansion. I've got it all.
Yeah.
I don't have to work. But you see, something told you, but there's more. There's more for you. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
Honestly, I am. Honestly, I am.
Thank you.
Okay, so you went through all the cancer stuff and all of that with, you know, like a five-year-ish kind of thing. And
oh, no.
Cancer
was a chapter. Cancer was not like all. It was all the healing. All the emotional healing was the intense part. Divorce was like divorce ran circles around cancer. It was so much harder. Confronting all the emotional stuff and undoing every single pattern I had learned in childhood as a safety mechanism. Undoing that and being able to really genuinely look at how all of that early childhood abuse affected adult relationships and patterns. That was the bulk of the work. And it was in the middle of it where I felt like I was really gaining momentum. All of a sudden, I got breast cancer out of nowhere. And so breast cancer became this, like, the same thing. I remember lying on my floor once again because that's where I do a lot of my, like, intense shadow work and healing. And I remember lying there after a chemo appointment and – or not a chemo appointment, just a consult. And coming home and being, like, you know, cursing. Like, how the hell am I going to do this? And again, that voice came back. And it was unmistakable. And the voice said, you are going to make this beautiful. I remember like kind of sitting up and being like, pardon me. And again, the voice was unmistakable. It was just like, you are going to make this beautiful. And that was another one of those life-defining moments. I was like, oh, shit. I know exactly how to do that. Like, I don't know how to have cancer. I don't know how to go through treatment. I don't know how to be a single parent of three with almost full custody and like be self-employed and have cancer. But I really know how to make things beautiful.
That was
and
a
so
big undertaking, Lise, for you, a huge undertaking, what you did.
And as soon as I changed my focus And as soon as I decided that that's how it would be for me, that I wouldn't look at what anybody else's cancer experience had been, I would just make it uniquely my own. Miracles happened all over the place. Like, people went out of their way in the healthcare system to make it easier and better for me, including, like, my nurses knew that I wanted to write, because I had been saying for a few years that I really wanted to write a book. And the overarching problem was that I never found enough time. And I was like, well, I guess 4 months of chemo with 5 hours of treatment every other week is going to be enough time. So I told my nurses that I was going to write a book, and could I have this one particular chair, because I liked the lighting of it and the angle. And every week I went, they saved it. Like, they just reserved it for me because they knew I really wanted it. So they just made it happen for me. And that's like one tiny example. There were so many miracles and so many people who just went out of their way. My family was like unbelievable. My aunts just were the best in taking care of me. My little girls and I already had a very strong relationship, and the cancer experience brought us even closer together. And they would, like, this is kind of a gross story, but it's an example of what, you know, cancer for me really brought to surface what I call emotional alchemy, being able to take something really dark and heavy and consciously transform it into being something beautiful and golden and uniquely your own. And like, every touch point of cancer I made that way, whatever, like, felt really hard, I would allow myself to feel it and really, like, acknowledge my own emotional body and consciously give it meaning. And so one of the things we did, chemo meds, like, you got to take so many meds before you go in for treatment, and they have terrifying names. Like, they're terrifying, and you can't pronounce them. You don't know what they are. You don't know what they do.
You just know you have to swallow them,
And you know that if you don't, you're going to get really, really sick. So there's, like, a lot of anxiety in that process. And so my kids and I made this chart, and, like, I didn't want the responsibility of taking, you know, 2 dexytrethamethoxyhydrazones at 8:30. So the girlies labeled that one with, like, a unicorn sticker, and then I would look at the chart and be like, oh, cool, I just have to take 2 unicorn pills at 8:30. And later on, post-treatment, if I'm starting to feel nauseous.
Gosh, I love this.
I know. After treatment, if I was starting to feel nauseous, I didn't have to worry about looking for the right anti-nausea med with a really hard name. I would take 2 shooting stars every 60 minutes until I felt better.
Oh, how beautiful.
Well, and then later I decided to that part of my curative treatment would be to do a full mastectomy. So I chose to go completely flat. I no longer have breasts. And part of that surgery, I was really, really worried about, because I would have to have, they're called drains, and it is as gross as it sounds. Like, they put
these bulbs
out at all. It's just awful. And they collect fluid, and I was like, again,
really
icky about it. And so my kids and I had to track the color and the volume every day as I was draining it out. And I became like this weird science project. So my kids and I every morning would go into the bathroom together, and I would drain it out into the measuring cup, and they would, like, measure the volume and record it, and they would label the color. So they would be like, today it's vampire blood, 15 milliliters, or they'd be like,
now how old
candy
were your
apple
children?
Red.
How old were they?
They were, I have twins, so they were 6, 6, and 8 at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. They're pretty amazing.
They are amazing. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, wow, they became a part of this whole thing with you.
100%.
And can you imagine the learning that they got from this?
Yes.
The understanding. I wouldn't be surprised if you don't get any nurses out of it, because they took care of you.
Know.
You know what I'm saying? Or doctors or something.
Straight
because
to the top.
That's special. That's special. That's very special.
It was. And for me, like, emotional health is my passion, right? Because, you know, emotionally is where I struggled my whole life. And I was told I was too sensitive and that I was overreacting, and that basically how I felt didn't matter. And the message that was internalized is that I don't matter. Like, who I am is not good enough. unless I perform in a particular way. And so that is definitely my rosebud. And so for my children, I'm just so passionate about making our home a really emotionally aware home. And it becomes just so lovely and fun. And so it was really, really important to me not to hide anything, not to shame anything, but to really like, okay, cancer is happening. So how do we embed that and embody that as a part of our lives without letting it define our lives? So, you know, I used to have really long, beautiful blonde, like golden waves, and now it's back to my chin. So like it's coming back really nicely. But the thought of losing my hair was so painful. And it was like, well,
no, it is.
You know,
I can imagine. But
not
no,
doing,
I see
oh,
people.
Man.
You know, I look at you know animals and stuff on Instagram. I'm a follower there with all the YouTubes and even the little videos
yeah.
that are on Instagram. And I see it all the time. And I just you just want to grab them and hug them because
yeah.
people don't realize it. I mean, you know, it's first of all, when you're a woman, that's part of who you are. And
yeah.
and oh yes, you can put something on. And I had a girlfriend, my best friend, passed away 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
she had a cancer of the blood. Hers was different. Hers
yeah.
was called sarcoma. Sarcoma was
yeah.
called.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she would call me every day. And she listen to this, Lee. She could have used you, or you could have used her. She would sit in the mm-hmm. bathroom in the bathtub and just sob and sob and sob. And
aww.
You know, she was in Michigan and I was down here, and I so wanted to just be there to help her because
mm-hmm.
now look, you had three little angels with you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. She had a husband who didn't. You know, they just don't get it. And her daughter was not
yeah.
living with her, and that's my goddaughter. And I it would just crush me. You know, and sometimes
yeah.
he'd call me three or four times a day. I said, you call me whenever you want. I mean, so I was like a
yeah.
little extension. I did what I could with her. But how did you get through that? I mean, she told me one morning, she says, I just can't stand this hair falling out in my bathroom.
Yeah, so I shaved mine because I knew that would be more traumatic for me personally. And so I was kind of planning ahead and being like, okay, well, I know my hair is coming out. So very proactively and preemptively, I'm going to shave it. And because I was nervous about that, or not nervous, but aware that that had its own possibility to be its own trauma, naturally,
I
planned
yeah.
a party, right? And so we had a party at our house. It was really a small gathering, but some of my kids' closest friends came. My aunt was here. My kids' teachers were invited, and they showed up too. Some of my close girlfriends. It was really, really important to me to have like our little community here. And you know, my kids and I made special snacks, and we made a special playlist so that even if it turned out to be a horrible moment, they would still have the oh yeah, mommy lost her hair the same day we had that party. And so I was really, really careful to already set up some like positive takeaways. So our people came over and a friend of mine showed up. I was wearing like a leopard print bathrobe, and my friend came and she had the clippers and she just tackled it head on. She shaved my head. She gave me a mullet halfway through. So we were really like playing with it. And I was like wearing bright red lipstick the whole time. And as it turns out, I looked really cool with a shaved head. And so even that moment became celebrated and joyful and beautiful. And if you looked around, you would have no idea that it was like a woman who was about to go through chemotherapy. It was just like, well, here we go. Like this is, there was just so much radical acceptance involved. And I think that was fundamental to the success. And incidentally, you know, like emotional health is the space that I work in for a living. So I had tons of tools and resources at my disposal already. I just became like a living testimonial of the work that I do. And it made me like even better at my job because I really, really sunk into like walking the talk.
Did you ever get some kind of wigs to put on? What did you do?
No, it was really important. I'm a very natural, real person. And for me, it would have felt this is for me personally, this is not a judgment, this is just for me, it would have felt disingenuous to wear a wig. And
okay,
that kind of
she did, my girlfriend did.
For me,
yeah, she did, but when she was like home, Lise, she would wear a scarf. It was only really when she went out amongst a lot of people, her friends, but this is what she had to do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, if you look around now, girls are doing this anyhow. There's no reason.
Well,
and they're doing
it. You have to remember, too, that this is such a huge part of my own healing that, like, I thought my hair was a part of me. That's a fallacy. I thought my breasts were a part of me and part of what makes me a woman. That's a fallacy. Like, losing those parts of me and really choosing to let go of those parts of me brought me way closer to myself, because it allowed me to stop. I didn't even know I was hiding behind aspects of myself, but it allowed me to stop doing that and really start leading with my light. So I was like, for me to wear a wig, I'm still hiding. I'm hiding something about me. So I really just chose, because it was the right thing for me, to just double down and be. Like, I just showed up. And it was really, really lovely. I'm really happy my hair has grown back in. Like, I am loving that process, too, because it has been...
Did it take quite a... It doesn't take that long, because I notice... Because I color my hair, and I can tell you when I see the little, you know, the mark, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, geez. But it grows. 6 weeks, you can see that. You can see the growth right there. So now how long is it long? Of course, you're on Instagram. I can tell you how long it is.
It's like almost to my chin. But that's a couple of years. Like, it's
yeah,
a year and a half. But anyway, all of that to say,
but anyways,
cancer was like another defining moment. It was really a chapter.
You did, yeah, you did that, and so you got through that. And how does this book come about that you have? It's called To Call Myself Beloved, A Story of Hope, Healing, and Coming Home. I just love that title because it tells you something. And everybody knows when I look at a book, I tell everybody this, if it doesn't feel good to me and the cover is not for me, I won't buy it. I don't care what's in it. I mean, it's really, that's weird. That's a weird part of me. You know,
and I
don't know why. We all have
cover.
Our parts, I guess, don't we? But that's the truth. It's got to your sight is really beautiful too. Just like you. I mean,
you.
They really should follow you on Instagram, and they will see all these beautiful things. And I'm just so impressed. I mean, as soon as I saw what your book was and all about you, because I always get that from the publicist. They'll tell me, you know, this, that, and the other thing and all of that. I want her. I said, I want her on my show because I want people to know.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to how you sound. You're so strong. You you could help anybody get through this. Anybody.
I think so, too.
Well, you could.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so now you got through this, okay, and then what did you do? You were doing your own workshops and stuff at the same time. What were you doing? Tell me.
No, just before I started chemo, I knew I wanted to do coaching professionally. I'd kind of been coaching people on the side, but I was like, no, I really want to do this. So just before chemo, I went and did a training program to become a coach. During chemo, I was like, well, now I've got this time. So I wrote the book proposal, which is like 110 pages, and you basically map out the entire framework of what the book is. So like, I really did write the bulk of the book during chemo. And I launched my podcast, so which is also like a top-rated podcast. So I did all that during chemo because I had the time and the space to do it, and it gave me this beautiful focal point to really turn my experience into something meaningful. And so during the pandemic, I published the book. It hit bestseller in self-esteem and personal spiritual growth, I believe. And the book is so special because it is the guidebook that I was looking for many years ago, when like everything I read was like, all you have to do is love yourself, just love yourself, things will be better. And I was like, right, how do I actually do that? And so I took this like compendium of everything I learned in a 5-year window through confronting emotional abuse, through divorce, through breast cancer, and culminated in this amazing self-love manifesto. So it's really special. It's equal parts self-help, memoir, and honestly, just feeling like you're on the couch with a good friend. It's so easy to read. It's so accessible. The feedback that I continuously get, not only through my Amazon reviews, but through people like DMing me on Instagram is, holy shit, this is the book I've been looking for. And, you know, I felt like you crept into my brain and took my thoughts out. And, like, people have read other self-help books before but have never really been able to finish them because they sound too preachy, whereas this one, it honestly just feels like a friend giving you very sage advice. So I'm very proud of it.
Well, you should be. I'm gonna make sure I get a copy of it. But, okay, so did it take you a long time to write the book?
Interestingly, it took me about 4 years, but 3 of those years were spent convincing myself that I was a person who could write a book, because that was the time I was really going through the growing pains of never feeling like enough. Yeah. And so then it took me, 4 months to write the proposal. And I think when you really boil it down, I think it took me probably 8 days to sit and write the book. Like, to actually write the book took no time. It was doing all the mental work, all the emotional work, and then, you know, that extended period of time to write the framework and get that all sorted out. The actual writing of the book was very easy.
I've heard before that it's, you know, people have said everybody has a book in them. Everybody has a book in them.
Yeah.
I went through with somebody who had Alzheimer's. And the man... I did an interview with this man, and he said to me, "You need to write about it." I said, "I don't really want to write about it."
Yeah.
And he said, "But just think of all the people you'll help." I said, "Well, that's true, but I'm at this point in time, I mean, this was 8 years ago." But the man tried to kill me every day. I mean, he turned into a monster. I mean, that's what happens. Sometimes you're really nice and sweet, but sometimes you're not. And then nothing worked on him at all. So it was rough. It was rough. And I get flashbacks. I probably have post-traumatic stress from it. I have flashbacks about it. But yet I try to, like a blackboard, I try to erase them off, and I try to go way back with some pleasant memories, because that's not fair. That's not fair to anybody to do that. And I have a son, just one son, and him and I talk about it. Did you have one friend that you could lean on a lot besides, like, your aunt? I mean, No.
During cancer and divorce, I have a couple of aunts with whom I'm very close. One aunt in particular became, like, my lifeline. Like, I would just phone her, and she has this amazing ability to phone me when she knew that I was not
sense,
in a good place.
Okay.
She just knew.
Isn't that wonderful? Yeah.
And which is amazing. Like, she's an incredible woman. My aunts are all incredible women. And then I had a friend during chemo who, like, the best support she gave me was to do the research that I absolutely couldn't face doing. So when I was deciding about, this is a big one actually, like, if I was going to do reconstructive surgery or if I was going to just choose to go flat, I would task her with that. And I was like, I can't look into this because I can't process it all, because it's emotionally overwhelming. So she would do all the research, and at first we were researching reconstructive surgery. So she was finding me the best surgeons. She was finding me the best nipple tattoo artist. And eventually one day she's got me down. She's like, "Listen, I got to tell you, you can't do this. It's way too dangerous. And here's all the research that supports it." And it was like this full body yes. I was like, she's right. Like, I know intuitively this is not the right thing to do. So, and I had a friend who drove me to appointments and things like that, which was great. But I would say that that support was incredible because she did so much of the mental and emotional work that I was like, I got to draw the line, and I draw it right there. But otherwise, as I said.
So you never had implants?
Take care of me. No.
You chose not to?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Can you tell me why?
Because
you're young.
Shadow was...
Okay.
Yes.
No, this
and.
Is part of you. That's why I want to know. This is part of you. And there's going to be people that will be listening to this broadcast after. And they're going to say, well, God, why did you ask her? Why she didn't do this? And so I'm going to ask you, why did you decide not to do? I had a friend who had breast cancer also, but she got implants. She got both of them done immediately because that was her choice, right? Okay.
Yep.
So what was your decision? How did you make that decision?
So unsurprisingly, I was lying on the floor figuring out what the hell I was going to do. And I remember having to go very deep and very dark into my own shadow. And that shadow was like, you know, you couldn't find a man when you had long blonde waves and double D boobs. So how the hell are you going to find a man when you're bald and flat? And that was a thought that was so intensely powerful.
But you knew flat was permanent, you see. Getting your hair back was not. So right away,
still,
that's what I would say to you. You know what I'm saying? But you knew that this would be permanent.
100%. Because for me to create fake breasts would be from like a really bizarre place. Getting implant surgery is rife with so much danger. Like, it's such a risky surgery, and they go wrong more often than they go right. And to me,
well,
I was like, it's not worth it. It's not worth the risk. I don't need to have breasts to feel whole. I don't need breasts to feel loved. And for me, it was just the right choice to go flat. So immediately, before I even booked my surgery, no, that's not true. I booked my surgery date, and then I booked a photo shoot with this independent lingerie company because they do this muse series and they feature really interesting or inspiring women. And so I pitched them to be a part of that muse series. And so I booked my surgery date, and then I booked my photo shoot date like immediately after I knew the scars would have healed. And we did a beautiful lingerie shoot, like topless, followed by being featured in, it's called Now Magazine, and it's a Toronto publication. I did another like basically nude photo shoot, really to reclaim my body and to really step into this next level embodied femininity that my body can look like whatever it looks like. And I still have the choice to be this beautiful embodied feminine queen.
You're amazing.
Thank you.
You really are. You are amazing. You're so brave and inspirational. And people need to go to your Instagram and see how beautiful you are. Even on the cover of your book now, your hair is really short. Looks really cute, though. I mean, you look really cute like that. you really do look very pretty. But such an inspiration to everyone. Now, in this book that you did, is part of your recuperation and the process. I mean, it must have bits and pieces of it in there, right? You must have. I don't have the book, so I can't. Okay.
A little bit, but as I the book is really divided into three parts. Like, it was going through all the childhood stuff, divorce, and cancer. And I would say, like, to your earlier point about having a book in you but not really being ready to write it, I would argue that when you have that reaction, like, oh, this book is too painful for me to write, you're not ready to write it. Like, by the time I was ready to write this book, it's because I didn't need to write it anymore. You know, 3 years ago, had I written it, it would have been a tell-all book. And that's not the right intention with which to write a book. So for me writing it, it's like I had to go through everything and heal it first. And then I was able to write it really objectively. And I'm actually writing a second one in 2021 about like the lost art of being alone and how like loneliness is this pervasive feeling. And it's only because I'm at the tail end of really healing this deep, dark loneliness, that now I can write about it. Now I can share that story of what it is like to be single in almost 40, right? And having, like, absolutely no intention. I know, but it's just like much different.
No, but it doesn't matter how old. The age is nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, what one goes through at 40, one goes through at 60, 30,
yeah.
whatever. It's that moment in time for you. And I'm glad to hear that you're writing something else. You know, I will tell you, I have, because of what I went through, and of course I don't have anybody in my life, and it gets very lonely for me. However, I have two really strong friends. I mean, I'm strong. I have like these two big, I'm only 5'2", and I have these two big girlfriends, like bookends, and this one, she says to me, "You can do anything." I said, "Well, I know my granddaughter tells me that." And she said, but listen," she said. I mean, she's just this tower of strength. And she, you know, she helps me along. I mean, I don't, you know, she'll say, "Why are you lonely?" And I said, I get lonely. I was an only child, Lise. There's no reason it should bother me.
Yeah.
But it's different. It's different. And I was knocked around. See, I was knocked around all the time. And so she said, "But just think about this." My son and I talk about this all the time. He says, what do you want somebody in your life for?" He said, "First of all, they all have baggage." And he said, "They're all pains in the patooties." And he said, "Mother, men are pigs."
I don't think that's a blanket statement on all men.
No,
I
it's
really
not,
don't.
Of course. We laugh about it. But anyway, he'll say to me, you know, he'll say to me, you know, "Just think, you'd have to have... maybe you'd have somebody that seemed to be really nice and they'd start ordering you around, like you were ordered around before." He said,
"Yes,
so then you'd have to go through that."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then you'd have to go through that. I said, but I don't want somebody every day, you know?
Yeah.
Isn't that awful? But it's true. I don't know. I think, and I believe so much in God, and everybody knows this, I think... Mm-hmm. God has me right where I should be. I think I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. So, you know, sometimes I talk to him every day. And sometimes I'll say, "Well, you know, I'm not real too happy today." I said, "You know, kind of would be nice to have somebody want to take me out to dinner." And then I'll sit there and I'll think, no. Expectations and all that, I don't think I want to go through that. I mean, you know, you're still young. You have lots of time. You're beautiful. You're just a beautiful woman. You have so much to offer. And these three little girls are just, I see pictures of them, are totally amazing.
They're amazing.
You brought three little amazing, they're angels. You brought these little angels into the world. And and God knew what they would be doing for you. He knew, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And how impressive you are. Okay, so now, this book was just published in August, right?
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. Okay. When do you think this other one's coming out?
I think probably around this, I think November 2021.
I was going to say late in the year. Yeah. Takes time to get it all put together and all that.
Now,
the cover of this book, I want to talk to you about it. It's just, I like the script. I'm going to give you a critique on it. I love the photograph of you. Truly.
You.
Now, is it, this was your natural hair color? It came in that color? Amazing. No. It's just, she's got the script, "To Call Myself Beloved." She's got it like in a script. It's like somebody wrote it, you know, and then there's the text beneath it. But it's just, you can look at it and say, "Oh, I know what this is about." I mean, if you're smart enough, you can figure it out. But it's beautiful. And I'm going to have Roxanne send me a copy. I usually get them anyways. You know, I get, "How many you want? What do you want to do with this?" And, you know, this is recorded, so I will send her the recording also. And then my Candy, who's in the chat room right now, she will put it together and put it on YouTube, and she'll add the audio and everything. But so do you have anybody in your life right now?
In a romantic way?
Yeah. Or a good friend?
I don't.
Yeah. Okay. And that's not bothering you at all, I can tell.
No, it is something that I deeply desire, but I think that the timing hasn't been right yet. But I have this intuitive feeling that it's not going to be like that for much longer.
Good for you. I'm happy for you. I am. You're just this breath of fresh air and inspiring. And, you know, like for me, you know, I'm a lot older than you are, but mm-hmm. what I went through, of course, it's the same, but it isn't the same. Everybody's walk is different. You know, sometimes it's painful physical. Sometimes it's emotional. Yeah. You know, mine was, I never got hurt. Let's put it this way. I was pushed around and thrown and stuff, but I never got physically hurt. I was very lucky. But I wasn't very lucky, Lise. I had help you couldn't see. I knew it, and I knew what to do, and I handled it. And I did it for probably at least a year. And so it wasn't, it's not like yours. See, what you went through was much more long-term. But I feared for my life every moment of the day.
Wow.
Because I didn't know. Well, you don't know what somebody's going to do to you.
You have no idea.
No, but, and that's not to say that yours wasn't tough. I have no idea. I just have the greatest respect for you because anybody that's listening that has, is going through something, and it's, I know you cry, I know, but I don't know, but you know, Lise, you know what it was like, and your three little angels. Make sure, are they in your book? Little angels. That's what they are. They're three little
angels. It's not really. I'm really protective of their privacy, and so like I don't actually post very many pictures of them. I mention them in the book, but it's really not like I just really value the sanctity of our relationship.
I don't blame. I do that with my granddaughter. I don't post her on Instagram at all. I don't put her on anything. I don't do Facebook and Twitter. My Candy does that for me, and. I don't do that because I'm like you. I just don't want to call attention. It's not about her, you know, the work that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just part of you. They are part of you.
Yeah.
Now, was your ex-husband supportive of you?
That I'm not going to talk about.
Okay. All right. No. I don't want you to if you don't want to. No. But, okay, so. Now, this other book is going to be about being alone, correct? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that we have so many cultural narratives and stories around, like, oh, you're not going to do that alone, are you? How could you ever do that alone? Oh, my God, aren't you lonely? And we have this, like, you know, alone equates to loneliness and that alone is a bad thing. And then when you start scratching the surface, there are so many women who are in marriages, who are in family dynamics, who are parents that are like, oh my God, I just want to be by myself. Is that bad? You know, like, what would it be like if I even had time to myself? We've really distanced ourselves from what it means to develop a relationship with ourselves. And it's really easy, really, really easy to market things based on self-love or to post a meme every now and then about self-love. But I think that we don't fully understand on a massive level that self-love is purely about cultivating a beautiful, accepting relationship with yourself. And we spend so much of our lives focused on, you know, how are you going to be a great wife? And how are you going to be a great partner? How are you going to be a great daughter? How are you going to be a great sister? How are you going to be a great friend? And it's like, wow, stop. How are you going to be a great person? What makes you who you are? Independent of the roles that you play, the masks that you wear, who are you? And I have found in my own experience that it has been absolutely, like, it was a painful journey. And what that difficulty and challenge and 100%, like, what the pain brought was this phenomenal relationship to have to myself that I didn't even know existed. And, you know, I feel like having the gift of seeing the other side of that, of being very comfortable in who I am as a person without any relationship to anyone, like without defining myself in relationship to anybody, is really fascinating. And I think, you know, and certainly in my coaching practice, I talk to a lot of women about what brings pleasure and joy and comfort into their lives. And a lot of us have lost sense of what it means to simply be. And so that's what this book is exploring. It was going to be like an exploration of relationships, but really it's going to be an exploration of like how to be alone, like how to come into a relationship in harmony with yourself.
No, and you know what? You're actually helping me right now because I'm listening to you and I'm relating about sometimes, you know, I have a cat. She's like a person. But I am doing better. I am doing better.
Yeah.
But I have what I call a bunch of champions around me that are really supportive and have this way of saying, well you're fine. You're fine. They just talk to me. They don't criticize me. They listen, and we just talk. And there was a time, believe it or not, and this could kind of relate, after my husband passed away, and I went through all of that, okay, my girlfriend would call and say, well, come on, let's go to lunch. Let's go walk around shopping. Well,
you know what
I did? The first couple of years, this is no joke, I followed her around. I didn't look at anything. I didn't pick any. You know how women, you're always picking up stuff and looking and, oh, yeah, okay, let me go look over. I didn't leave her. I was afraid to be left somewhere, and I couldn't find her. I remember having that feeling, and, you know, that was coming, like, out of some kind of a shell or a cocoon or prison that I was in, let's put it that way, and all of a sudden, oh, here's the sky, here's the sidewalk, oh, because I was stuck in the house. I could go to the mailbox, and that was it. And so, that was, but you see the fear of being alone? That's what it was for me. I was alone.
Yeah.
And it took me several years. And finally one day, because I would do this a lot with her, and every time she asked me to go, I went. My son said to me, Mother, you have to go, because if you don't, she'll stop asking you. She would never have done that, she said, but I told her that. 3 or 4 years down the road, I would never do that to you. But that's what he said.
Yeah.
Go. Even if you don't want to go, go anyway, right? So that's part of being alone. You really are afraid. Yeah, I don't know what you're afraid of. What are you afraid of? I mean, my goodness. You know, you're functioning. well, it's true.
Yeah.
But it was tough. You know, I don't get like that now. Of course, now with the pandemic and everything, I'm not out as much. I mean, I'm out, but not as much as I used to be. But I remember those days, and it took me a long time, several years, to feel like I'd say to her, well, she said, I'm going to be over here. I said, okay, well, I'm going to go over here and look, and I would do it.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I wasn't comfy doing it.
But I'm sure you can see now, like, that was so based in fear. Right?
Yes.
And it's not like a real fear, quote unquote, and still it feels incredibly real. And so from where I stand, I think the question is always to check in with the emotional body. And it's like, okay, what is the story that I'm telling myself here, right? With anything. And that is like one of the principles of the work that I do. It's like, okay, I'm having this feeling. First of all, what is this feeling called? Oh, this is fear. This is loneliness. This is anger. Oh, shit, this is jealousy. Like, there are so many feelings that we don't know how to feel, and we don't even know how to label them. So I would always start by, like, identifying what is this actual feeling coming at. And then I ask, okay, where do I feel this in my body? And I get really in tune with where my emotional body and where my physical body are connecting, because that, too, is really insightful. And I always say to anybody who will listen, and then even when they won't, that like our feelings are just feedback. And that feedback is always giving us incredibly valuable insight to be healed. And so after I name the feeling and identify where it is being experienced in my physical body, then I start to ask myself, okay, what is the story I'm telling myself here? Because if you ask yourself the question, like, oh, why am I feeling this way? You get stuck in story. Like, people just want to attach to their pain and their story so bad. So if you ask, like, what is the actual story I'm telling myself? You can come to an answer. And then when you come to the answer, you can ask, oh, is this story true? And like 9.5 times out of 10, it's not true. And then you have that moment of clarity of like, holy shit, I'm feeling something that I know is not real. And it's creating great pain and emotional distress in my life. And that's when it leads you to this juncture point of like, okay, I've got a choice. I can stay stuck in that pain, or I can go deep and really confront what is bothering me and go
right.
Do that gently in a really healing capacity. And I think that like it's kind of a long process and it's a practice, but once you've mastered that practice, things get easier because we're met with so much less fear and resistance, and we
That's
sink
true.
So much deeper into this place of surrender and acceptance and actual awareness of our own emotional awareness.
And what I found myself doing is I forced myself to go each time.
Yeah.
There were mornings I'd say, oh, I really don't want to do this. I'd rather stay home in my comfort zone. But no, I would go. And all of a sudden, I don't even know when it happened, Lise. Like I said, I found myself saying, okay, I'm just going to be over here. Okay. I still wanted to know where she was.
Just that reassurance.
I don't know what it was. Yeah, it was like, oh, God, I'm going to get lost like a little kid. And I remember getting lost as a little girl in a store and this fear, you know, and I thought to myself, you're really smart. You're not going to get lost, you know.
Yeah.
But then going through all that, I was just coming out of all of this that happened to me. Now, every once in a while I get a little twang of it, but I come out of it. It's like something's
That's
you've
the
done
other
this
thing, right? Is that I think that so many people are feeling this across the globe right now. Is that we are social creatures, and we have a physiological, a sociological, psychological need to be with other humans. And you know, for those of us who are self-partnered, who like aren't in otherwise intimate relationships, it can feel like a real pain point, even if you're really, like, I'm very comfortable being on my own. And I still feel pain because I deeply desire partnership, because I deeply desire that loving connection and union with somebody. That's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to want to be with people. And you get this interesting paradox emotionally because you're like, well, I actually feel very comfortable on my own, and I still want to be with other people. And you get this, like, I love this notion that there's this sense of duality that too often we're kind of forced or cornered into feeling like we need to choose either or. Like, I can either be happy alone or miserable alone, right? It's like, no, you can be both. You can be both and. You can be both very content to be on your own and longing for partnership. And I think that that's also like next level emotional and self-awareness to really embrace and to embody that both parts of me exist and both are lovable. Both deserve a voice. Both deserve to be witnessed in their own experience.
And I know everybody's listening and thinking, boy, it sounds easy, but listen, it's not. None of what she's saying is easy. It's work.
But it gets easier. And that's why I have a job.
Well,
this is what I do for a living.
You what
I'm
doing.
People through.
You know, now I was afraid. I don't know what I was afraid of. I guess because I was ordered around all my life, and then I found I was out of this jail. I was free.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to act. I really didn't.
From a neurological perspective, that wasn't safe. If that's the pattern that was created for like a lifetime, even if it isn't healthy, even if it doesn't serve you, that is what feels like it's right and comfortable and true. So when that pattern stops or that pattern is broken, all of a sudden you don't feel emotionally or neurologically, like physiologically safe. And so suddenly people are thrown into a tailspin because they have no idea what to do because their world has been turned upside down, right? And it's like, that's what I help people with, like across the board. It's this understanding of what patterns are at play in your life, which ones are serving you and which ones are not serving you, like which ones need to be interrupted so that you can live this really purposeful and comfortable, feeling good in your life by choosing to unlearn, like neurologically, like rewire your brain and unlearn stuff that was acquired and kind of substitute it with like a much healthier intention-based pattern.
If somebody would have told me 10 years ago I would be doing what I'm doing now, I would have told them they were out of their mind. Because
amazing,
I talk to people that I don't even know.
Yeah.
And I love people. I love talking to people. I love talking to you. I've had so many people from all over the world, and it's like we're old friends. I mean, you know, it's like I just called you and said, hey, how is things going? And we just chat
like two
girlfriends. And see, that's what I always wanted to do with this. I never wanted it to be a Q&A. And my webmaster said something to me a couple of days ago. He said he listened to one of the YouTubes that Candy had done, and he said, have you listened to these? I said, oh, God, I don't like my voice. He said, you have a wonderful voice. He said, do you know what a gift you have? And I said, I don't know. I just know I love what I'm doing. Talking to you, I love this.
Mm-hmm.
I just love it. I mean, it doesn't give me an ego, put me on an ego trip. It just makes me feel really good inside because I'm bringing you to the world. I'm bringing what you have done, all your successes, all the things that you went through out to the world so everybody can hear it. And that's what I want to do. That's one of my jobs. He said, well, you have a gift and you're awesome. He's never told me that before, and he's been with me for 10 years.
Wow.
And he said, I guess I didn't pay any attention before. Oh, wow. He said, no wonder everybody wants to talk to you. but it's a,
you're like,
you know, I had a lady, listen to this, Lisa. I had a lady I had to call 2 days before the show because she was so nervous talking to me, and I said, oh, you'll see, you'll see. I called her and we're talking, and she said, oh, my God, this is easy. I said, I told you. Don't get nervous. We're just talking on the phone. You don't know if there's 100 people listening or whatever. We're just talking, and it went really, really great. That made me feel good, too. That was an accomplishment for me that I could bring her on, and she didn't miss a beat. Not at all.
Yeah. Right on.
And you are, I'm going to say this again, I am so impressed with you, and I hope we maintain some kind of communication. And I would really love for you to allow me to put something in my next issue of my magazine along with this link to the show. I mean, you can do it as many times a year as you want. It can be an excerpt. You can, if you have time, I'll go through Roxanne. Because I don't have your email address, but that's okay. I'll just go through her. And if you so desire, I would love to do that. I'll put your book on there and whatever you want and links. And you go to the magazine, mysticlivingtoday.com, and you can see, at least, what I have done. It's been going on since 1999.
That's amazing.
Well, it wasn't easy in the beginning. I had to beg for articles.
Wow.
I had to beg for,
wow.
Can you submit something? Can you write something? No, I don't do that. I don't have to do that now, but it's probably, you know, it's just, it's, I'm in another world when I do the magazine, Lise.
I love that.
It sits me up. It's just, I have my headphones on, I'm listening to my Motown music, rock and roll, whatever, I'm putting all this in, but it's serving a purpose. It's serving a purpose for the world because of all of you. It's not me. It's all of you that I put out there, and I want everybody to be proud of you just like I am of you, and I'm so glad we connected and so happy you wanted to be on my show. You have no idea. You helped me tonight, too.
Thank you.
You did?
I'm so glad. I'm so glad.
And finish that book. And then we can have you on again just before it's released or sometime, you know. And I'll send a note to she'll send you the link to the broadcast, and she'll send it to you, and you can see it. You can put it wherever you want. Candy will run with it, and I want to thank Candy for all she's done. She takes, you know, she put on here again. We had some people in the chat room that she'll put your link there, and she just has like little magic hands. I give it to her.
Oh, awesome.
It's great. It really is great. So thank you. You're wonderful. Stay the way you are.
Thank you.
And take care of those three little angels of yours, all right?
Thank you. I will.
Okay. And with that, you know, everybody, next week, let me see, we're going to be talking to somebody who knows angels, somebody that I got from my publicist out in California, old friend, and anyways, but it'll be regular time. Sometimes, you know, Lisa, I have to do shows early. Like last week was a man, he was in France, and I had to do him 1 to 2 in the afternoon. But,
oh, I love that.
And then I have somebody coming from, not Arabia, but way in that area, and I have to do it like 10 in the morning. She's like 9 hours ahead of me. So, you know,
I'm kidding.
No, I just did, and I enjoy it, and it doesn't really matter. You take care of yourself now. You keep doing what
you're
doing.
Thank you, too.
Oh, yeah, and I'll connect with you on Instagram, and we'll keep chatting a little bit here and there and saying hi, how are you, and all that kind of good stuff. Okay? All right, and for everybody listening, I want to remind you to be safe. Wear those masks. I know you hate them. I know it, you know, but it's the thing to do. You're not only protecting yourself, but everybody around you and those you come in contact with. And just think, you know, you could be a carrier and you give it to your grandma or your mom or your dad or your sister, and something really happens. You'll hate yourself. You really will. That's how my son is. He says, Mom, I'm not exposing you. I'm not allowing you to go to places that I don't think are safe. And he said, because it would destroy me if I knew it came from me, or if he knew I didn't take. Isn't that something that he didn't take care of me? So yeah, I'm very, very blessed. Thank you, Candy. I know you're here and you're listening as usual. And this has been a really great show. What an uplifting show. Oh, awesome. I'm always flying. I really, Lisa, I'm always flying. And like last week, we had a little French accent. It was a little hard to understand him. But you, oh my gosh, you have so much to say. Yeah, so you leave the show on a high. I want you to leave the show on a high. So that, I'm going to end like I always do, and say, believe in things you cannot see, because they really are there. And all my love to everybody out there. And be safe, be kind, take good care of yourself and your family and those that you love, because it's all you have, okay? And your near friends and all of that, just like I do. I protect everybody that I know. And I'm going to run this. You're going to love this song. It's called Free to Love. This is a group that does this, and Candy is a part of that. She brought this group to me, this gal, and it's such a great song. I mean, her and I, we always laugh because we're dancing. I'm turning, but anyways, you're welcome to listen, Lise, and we'll talk soon, okay, Lise? Take care. I love you dearly.
Thank you.
You're wonderful. Okay.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
If everyone could be who they were really meant to be.